This is related. I'm not deviating.
No, I
think
you were.
No, more, I think he's
Now, are you...
Because he is one of the most honest and pleasing person to ever be around.
That's cool.
You're sick, Ed. And that's on the record. No, thank you, Ed. I'm a stubborn Dutchman. We were all stubborn kids. The whole damn family was stubborn. Now, all the back generations were stubborn too. We would not really select a target, but whatever we undertook was never half-hearted. So one night, this is funny, I didn't know you were going to ask this question, but I wrote this down. This is February 11th, I wrote this. An objective, a target in life must be very thoughtfully and very carefully chosen and then pursued with every ounce of human effort. And I would say that that's the Van Ness credo. And right or wrong, we liked it. And it's just lucky. Now, here's the luck part. It's just lucky that someone else did, too. And for that, I'm grateful. But I don't know how that relates to success, but it does in a sense. But I think in a small sort of way, I achieved part of the objective I set out. After I teach myself the rest of it, why then I'll know more.
How would you like to be thought of or remembered 100 years from now? Gee, I think we'll invite Ted over. He's just coming for an hour. It's just going to go quick. I'm sorry.
No, we're not going to schedule. Gee whiz, let me see, Ted. I'm not trying to...
you don't even have to answer it.
But I'm not trying to dodge it, but just let me think for a second.
Sure.
How would you like to be thought of 100 years from now? Very carefully. I knew I could hear the wheels moving over there.
It's a tough one.
Well, this may sound trite, but as someone that... as a person that had the courage of his convictions. Because there's the stubbornness coming in, the objective. It might have turned out miserably, but I doubt if I would have dropped it. You know, I would have hunted around till something worked. But I don't think I would have changed it much. Changed the objective, and the objective wasn't to be the world's greatest anything. It's an ego dress to prove something to yourself. I was trying to prove something to myself.
When you say prove something, do you know what it was that you were trying to prove?
That I could do it. Whatever it was.
Just growing, learning and absorbing all this music and being an antenna or a
Well, I
radio.
Built a live steam locomotive almost on a dare. Here's the stubbornness coming back again.
Wait, are you telling me that's... You're not being facetious.
No. Well, we've got pictures. We've got pictures of it.
I've seen it.
It's photographed it. I was... Now, here's the watchmaking training. See, we all were watchmakers. And I was in a hobby shop on Western Avenue, and there were two fellows in there that were nitpickers about detail on locomotives. They were model railroaders. That's what they were. And there was a new brand and a very small size called Tabletop. And they were, because it was so small that you could put an electric paint on the top of this table and have all kinds of switches in it. And this one guy said that, and it says no detail. Well, somebody could build a tail in it. I said, but you can't. You can't see that well, can you? And he said, would you know how to build a tail in that? And he said, no, but somebody will come along. And they started a real, almost an argument over it. Well, there I stood with my big ears listening to this. And then one of the fellows said out of desperation, he said, someday somebody will build a live steam locomotive that size. I'm sorry I heard that. Because 8.5 years later came the live steam locomotive.
You don't mean that you worked on it?
Yes.
For that long?
Do you have one of the little postcards that
I've got all the pictures, Ed, that you took, yeah.
I printed up some postcards, including the actual size, and it's a real steam locomotive. It's not a model, it's a real
one. It's not a model, it's a miniature. It's a real locomotive through the wrong end of the binoculars. But that's a dime. See, it's a blow-up.
How did you learn about all that? Was it just research? And,
yeah.
A lot of...
yeah, that's what took 8.5 years. It didn't take 8.5 years to build.
Did you ever meet the fellows again?
Never saw them again.
Oh, how ironic.
No, I didn't have any idea who they were. But that's the stubborn... that's a stubborn strain that runs through this family.
I think stubborn does yourself an injustice. There must be a better word. I think industrious is closer.
Hey, Ted.
That's amazing. One of you guys hit it off. He's telling me about your specialties and with his knowledge in mechanics and such. You guys might build a new machine now and help save the world from all kinds of problems. It would be electrically and mechanically.
I haven't had a chance to. I haven't had a chance to paste the pedigree on there. But
I had a postcard size one in here. Yeah.
Well, I have the postcard, Ed.
Oh.
I have the postcards right here.
Oh.
But you can't get the.
No, I meant just so you could get an idea of how big it actually is.
The actual size. Yeah. There's the pedigree. That explains what it is.
Of course, I'll understand all this.
Well, any model railroader will.
And you used to have your own store with things like this, too.
That's the actual size.
That's the actual size, all right. And that's right under the drivers. It says, well, fantastic. Look at that. Do I see that nine piece up there? So those drivers are smaller than the dime.
So the feeling of satisfaction is worth the
8.5 years.
Yes, it was.
That's the ego trip. Plus the I'm not going to give up till that thing works. I had to make 22 boilers.
If you think that's something, you ought to see what he does with the guitar.
Yeah, I've heard stories about that.
But no. Anyway, I made 22 of these boilers. And it takes, it takes 3 months to make a boil. I had to make 22 of them. The 22nd one worked. Now, because I could make a locomotive that long, you know, because of watchmaking is miniaturization, you know, personified. So, but I had to scale down. Now, here's the research that you mentioned. I had to scale down physics. For instance, I couldn't use the metal that the Swedish bearing iron that the steam chest is made out of on the big locomotive. I would like to use the same material. But down at that size, under a microscope, which is microscopic sizes, it's like Swiss cheese. It's not dense enough. So I had to use exotic metals. And for instance, in that steam chest, that's one piece, there are 22 channel holes. It's honeycomb. So anyway, I had to make 22 of those before. Now here's the spoiling.
Is he around?
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's there's boiling water in there to make steam. All right, the inside of that boiler isn't as big around as my finger. So how do you keep boiling water from boiling up and going over the top of the pot, you know? So the steam pipe is right there, and so the other boilers, the boilers, the droplets of boiling water would hop up in the steam pipe, would come down the delivery pipe into the steam chest, and you know what? The water doesn't compress at all. So it would wind up in the cylinder, and the cylinder, the piston would come back, and of course it would blow ahead right out of the cylinder. So the 22nd boiler had a double superheated steam system, and that's the steam that came out of it was so hot it would, if you put a piece of paper in it, it would turn black immediately. So it wouldn't set it on fire because there's no flame, you know. So, but it's real live steam. And if you put that page in the steam, it would just turn to charcoal right now. Yeah. All right, so the drop of water, that did away with the drops of water. So, because they were long gone by the time it got down into the steam pipe.
Did you make watches too? I mean, I know the whole family tradition, but did you yourself or repair? Or is that where you learned
well,
some
I mean,
of this?
Well, in the training, yes.
You were training for it before the music took over, huh?
No, it was not during the
flying. Oh, you were doing
it? Yeah, sure. My grandfather trained. Yeah, he had a watch shop in Huntsville, Jersey. Yeah, and I was playing at night, and then I'd go over to the shop in the daytime.
Well, that answers.
I took the training.
All I can say is that explains to me only the genesis of why you would even be able to comprehend that, but still to do it is...
That aircraft, he made that engine just from memory of one that he designed. I don't know,
50 years ago.
Yeah. And you know what, that engine, you know what it runs off of? Compressed air.
George was saying it before. I didn't understand.
Ted, this is a corny thing, but I know Ed won't mind. There's the pedigree. It should be trimmed and glued down here someplace because it tells what it is and who done it.
Hey, that's wonderful.
That's a handy thing to do, but I...
No, it isn't, not at all.
This is some of the stuff that I think is the real George Van Epps.
To me, it's...
There are two things...
The guy.
I've never played anything I really liked, but there are two things that I've done that I'm proud of. And in this order, I'm proud of my family, my daughter, my wife, and my grandson. That's number two. Yeah. Because I know that sounds handy, but...
No, not at all.
They said that couldn't be done.
It's far from handy. It's a big achievement.
Well, it hasn't been exploited.
I understood it more, so...
The model magazine that probably got it hasn't been exploited because they have no insurance on it.
You can't patent it, or...
You can't patent it. But it's high... Look at the size of it. It's highly swipeable.
And they won't insure it, huh?
They'll insure it
for the world, huh?
Yes. We've had 30-some-odd insurance companies, underwriters, and they say, well, how much did it cost to build? They won't pay you for your time. Even though I was a professional, they won't pay you for your time.
Why won't they?
Because they just don't do that.
That's right, right?
It would have to be sold to have a place of value on it. You know the meaning of priceless. It means it's worth nothing. So it's like that answer to the two sons that you told me about. So the materials cost $342.73. Well, that's what they'll insure it for. That's what the material costs.
They don't realize the aid they have,
okay? No, they don't. They don't realize that. Even though we were building micro miniaturized mechanics professionally, but they count that as a hobby.
Has this ever been done, to your knowledge, by anyone else?
No. I'm leery of claims.
But I say to your knowledge, that's what.
No. Well, I'm a member of the Life Steam Society. See, they gave me an honorary membership because of that. And the Live Steamers, the National Live Steamers Association, they say it's the world's smallest. I don't. I'll tell you why. There might be somebody behind a locked door in Sweden or Switzerland with one half that size. See? But I told that to the people at the Live Steam Society, and they said, all right, there may be somebody. Sure. But there might be a nut like you somewhere around there that's got one smaller. But that's the smallest we know of. So until they come out with one, that's the world's smallest.
You could have made it smaller if you wanted to. You chose this size because for probably reasons that I don't understand. But
because it was the size of the a tenth of an inch to the foot. Of the one that the fellow said, oh, you can't get any detail on that. And the other guy, the bottom line was, oh, someday somebody will move a live steam locomotive inside. So I built it to that dimension for the simple reason that that's where it all started, and it seemed like a neat idea at the time. So then a company in Indiana, HP Products, hired me to make an electric locomotive. And this wasn't the upshot of that, the direct upshot of that conversation between those two guys. See, I left part of the story up. HP Products, in fact, I was in the store to pick up one of those kits for this little locomotive, this little electric locomotive, which had no detail. Well, through Frank Troxell, who owned that railroad store, he had told the people at HP Products that I could add detail to it. That's the reason I was in the store. Now, I'm not a model railroader. So they hired me to do it. And I reworked their kit. And I added detail and added detail. And in the meantime, I put 6-7 months in it. Because I was doing a lot of shows and recording. And the company went tapioca. It folded. So I'm left with all that time, and no, they didn't pay a dime yet. So I decided to finish it after much deliberation, 2-3 weeks. But I thought, hell, I remember that conversation. I'm going to scrap the electric thing. I'm going to go back to square one, and I'm going to make that thing a live steamer. And that's how that came about.
There'll be something about this in the article, you can rest assured. As you were talking, I was listening, but I've got some thoughts. That's nice, I'm sure.
You can feel free, Ted, because that little pedigree, that should go with it, because it explains what it is. And, but
well, let's see, maybe just one or two more questions. What would you like to talk about that we haven't talked about? What do they always leave out that you would hope to prior interviews if they might be able to discuss? Of course, they may still try and cut it, but I'll fight for it.
Well, one of the things I would like to mention, and I think you know what I'm going to say, that the 4-5 chord rockers are not, they're still in the majority. But there are a lot of young kids, and it's a joy to listen to and to see them, that want to know more. They want to know what makes a guitar tick, and I've talked to a lot of them lately, the past year or so, at the show in Chicago and also here. And I think the tide is turning. I think we're going to wind up with a crop of new, I mean, kids,
right.
Good kid guitar players, they want to know more.
Do you have any advice for them on what they should do to make it happen for themselves better? Is that that's a trite question, I know, but coming from you, it might carry more weight.
No, the only thing I would say to that is to, taste can't be taught, but it can be influenced. And so, when they listen to all types of good music, when they find the particular idiom they like listen to everybody, every good professional that plays that way, and try to have the various rub off. That's very important.
It's helped me a lot. The last few weeks preparing for this, I've seen that.
Yeah. Have you been preparing that long?
Well,
that takes a lot of your time.
That's not an accurate statement if I were to call it preparing. Having fun for the last few weeks and thinking about this. I mean, it's fun. It's not work.
How about your work, though, and your playing and your teaching?
How about it? It's not as important as this. They should have done this 10 years ago. You know, it's ridiculous that they would wait this long. Why don't you publish that, guys?
People just don't realize
that's,
you know.
Put some of this guy back on. Would you mind getting something that into? Putting instrumental?
Yeah, there you are. All young instrumentalists, regardless of the instrument, but particularly the guitar, because that's what we're talking about. It's not a final word of advice, but I think a very important one in my mind is, first of all, they must be honest with yourself and select the idiom that fascinates you most and pursue that. Of course, your fascinations will change, your idioms will change. But approach your instrument with love and respect. Because the respect bounces back. There's a feedback. You treat it well, it'll treat you well. You beat it to death, it'll beat you to death.
Honest mistake.
An honest mistake. This has to do with sincerity of what you
put
playing.
This on too. Okay.
No matter what the job at hand is, it should be done with as much integrity and sincerity as possible. And a mistake does not spoil a performance. But there are different types of mistakes. There are two distinct types of mistakes. One is a dishonest mistake, and the other is an honest mistake. And the difference between the two is this, that a person can be a marvelous technician and have a brilliant mind working back of all this technical ability and be distracted and make a mistake. But then they do it over again and here it comes, letter perfect. Now, the dishonest mistake is when somebody tries to play a piece of music that is up over their head, they're in water that's too deep, and they're not technically proficient enough to execute the passages, and so they fall down and make mistakes. Now, those are dishonest mistakes because they're either playing it, the material is either too complicated or they're playing it too fast. So if it's very complicated, play it very slow, and you won't fall down and fall on your face.
And yet even an honest person could make a dishonest mistake at first not realizing that he was in over his head.
Yeah, and if he tried to play too fast.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, sure. So, but...
story of my life. The basic
meaning of the dishonest mistake is that no matter how many times or how slow the person played this passage or this piece, he still can't play it. So